Welcome to the Wrestling Yeti Podcast. I'm your host, the Yeti, Mike Keaton. Today I'm here, we're going to talk about my Sunday Superstar Spotlight. I have my good friend Mike Graham here. We're going to talk about the 2015 Hall of Fame inductee to the WWE Hall of Fame, Macho Man Randy Savage. Mike, what's your welcome to the podcast?
Thank you. It's glad being here at the Yeti compound. So
you're here again.
Second time here. You know, a lot of people don't come to the compound once. They don't even know it exists. And, you know, so it's a very big accomplishment to come here twice.
A lot of people don't know that Boulder City exists, so
No.
So we're here today. We're going to talk about Macho Man Randy Savage, his career, his induction into the WWE 2015 Hall of Fame. Mike, what's some of your memories of Macho Man?
Well, I mean, obviously he's, he was larger than life. He wrestled bigger than what he was. He wasn't a big guy, but his interviews, and he would just go way off the reservation, and he's a great interview. And then classic matches. Sure, we'll talk about Steamboat, and he had a good feud with the Honky Tonk Man, a feud with Jake the Snake Roberts. He got maybe the best match out of the Ultimate Warrior.
He's wrestled probably more of the top stars from the last probably, well, not considering the current era, but eras all the way back to, his dad.
Angelo
Poffo. This man has just wrestled forever because he wrestled his first match in 1974. He went pro after his baseball career, which not a lot of people know.
Yeah.
He played four seasons in the minor leagues where he was, he batted a 254 batting average, had 16 home runs and 66 RBIs. He also a note on that was that he injured his shoulder in a collision at home plate, his throwing shoulder, which was his right shoulder. So he taught himself how to throw left-handed so that he could keep playing in the minor leagues.
Yeah, fantastic athlete. So
he was just more than a wrestler. He was an athlete. He was an all-around athlete. And like myself, I didn't pick up watching Macho Man until he signed in 84 with WWF at the time. And, I didn't realize that he had feuds with him and his brother with the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah.
He had feuds with Jerry the King Lawler and the old Continental Wrestling that Jerry ran. It's amazing. And I didn't know this either, that Ole Anderson actually gave him the name Savage because he said, a Poffo doesn't wrestle like this. Only a savage would wrestle like this.
And it fit him perfectly. He was a savage in the ring, and he was a savage on the microphone, and, he was probably savage with Miss Elizabeth, and that was kind of an interesting, he was more, his real life was close to kind of what his wrestling image was, which is very interesting.
Exactly.
So,
like you said, his voice, everything. When I remember, I was coming out of, it was Clash of Champions, I think, in 1995. It was here in Vegas, or it was in Vegas. We're not in Vegas right now, but at the old Caesar's Palace, they had knocked down the outdoor arena, but put up this metal building. And it was one of the first Clash of Champions, I believe, that Macho Man was at. He comes out, everybody's standing around outside where the wrestlers come out at, and somebody asked him for an autograph. And without missing a beat, he ain't got no time for no autographs. Oh, yeah. But
that's how he talked.
But that's how he talked. And everybody that knew him would contest to that. And that's just the way he was. He'd come up to, hey, I think we need to do this match this way. And it's just, it was Randy. Talk about a little bit of his stats here as a wrestler. He was, most notable, he was four-time WCW champion, two-time WWF champion, one-time Intercontinental champion. I think his one run as Intercontinental champion, I think, was probably one of the top Intercontinental Championship runs probably of all time. At least it's in the top 10 anyway, or at least top 5.
He was, you know, that run, I mean, he wrestled everyone. So, you know, his Tito Santanas and guys like that. And then he had that great feud into Ricky the Dragon Steamboat with the bell and crushing his throat and his larynx and all that stuff. So he was a main event guy with the Intercontinental title.
Exactly. And then he went on to win King of the Ring in 87.
The Macho King
with him and Sensational Sherry.
Yep.
He went on then, his match in 87 actually with Ricky Steamboat won match of the year. According to PWI and the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, which at the time were two of the top wrestling magazines or subscription things that you could get for wrestling at the time. I remember when I was a kid, I always wanted Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that was the magazine. That was the magazine. It had Ric Flair was on the cover. Hogan was on the cover. I mean, who's who?
It covered everything.
Nick Bockwinkel. I mean, everybody that you could think of who's who was on the cover of that magazine. He was also some of the smaller ones. He was a one-time USWA world champ and three-time ICW world champ. Now, I looked into the ICW. ICW was...
The Insane Clown Posse?
No. It was Intercontinental Wrestling, and his dad actually owned the promotion. And his dad started this promotion as a outlaw promotion. Outlawed promotion back in those days because it wasn't a sanctioned territory by either NWA or AWA.
And this was the one in Memphis, right? And they broke out and feuded with Jerry Lawler.
Exactly. Okay. They later on feuded with Jerry Lawler. Yeah. That's why all of POFOs went to Memphis Wrestling or Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett's Wrestling. Yeah. But the King
of Memphis.
But an interesting note on
next
that is...
Next to Jay Hendricks.
Yeah. Jay Hendricks is the King of Selmer.
King of Selmer. Right down the road. Right down the road.
But he got me all laughing about Jay. But his dad started that promotion because he didn't feel that Randy was getting the push that he needed or that he deserved because everybody saw. I mean, you can go back and find some old matches on YouTube of him fighting in ICW and fighting in some of these smaller things, and you could just see that he was something special.
Yeah,
that he wasn't just a normal big gut wrestler that come out of the South. He was, no offense to big gut wrestlers that come out of the South. My email is wrestlingyeti.
You could send your complaints.
WillKeller@gmail.com. Shout out, Will. Anyway.
That's what the Yeti, that's who he is. So, Will Kaler, yep.
So, anyway. But some of the matches that he had was just spectacular. The man, he knew how to sell. He was a ring general. He knew how to... he wouldn't call his matches in the ring, like per se, like a normal ring general would. But he knew what would work and wouldn't work. And he would sit down with the person before the match and go, okay, this is what we need to do. And he actually wanted to rehearse matches sometimes, which was unheard of because of kayfabe back in the time. And, you know, we've all heard, especially with this last interview, that with Stone Cold and Triple H, that kayfabe is dead. Well, it's not really, but it is.
Yeah.
Kayfabe of the way you and I grew up with kayfabe, it's dead.
Yeah.
But there's a new type of kayfabe. Anyway, we won't go into that because we're talking old school now. But it was unheard of because of the kayfabe. But he would want to sit down and go over every move, everything that was going on, because he was such a perfectionist that he wanted a 5-star match with whoever he was going out there with, whether he was putting them over or he wasn't putting them over.
And you look at, like, Ricky Steamboat, and that's, like, the most infamous one of a rehearsed match. And, Ricky Steamboat puts 5-star match, and he put him in a sleep. So did the Macho Man. So, you know, you have maybe the greatest match of all time. And some people are like, well, it was scripted. But look what it's in. I mean, Chris Jericho said, I mean, that's what got him into wrestling.
Yeah.
And him and his buddy learning that match and memorizing it and doing the exact same match that they just saw, you know, on tape. So it's, you know, and you see where it's worked with, like, the Ultimate Warrior, who was not a great technician in the ring. But that WrestleMania match was great, probably because he was able to script it with the Ultimate Warrior and get him comfortable. And so,
right.
So there was a method to his madness.
Exactly, the madness.
The macho madness.
So. And it was a real, that was a real thing. That wasn't just a catch line.
He was crazy.
He was crazy.
Yeah.
He was crazy about the business.
Yeah.
In his mind, I don't think he was crazy.
No. But you look at, you know, like he had Miss Elizabeth and, you know, kind of who he was and how that made that even more realistic, you know, that kind of.
And to be honest, I think if he was still around, he would be up there with Bristow. To be able to sit down and talk to somebody about a finish of a match and how a match should go. And I think that, I mean, if he could have cleared up his stuff with WWE
before,
before he passed away, that he may have had a job as the Gorilla Monsoon of this era.
Yeah. You know? And he may have been, you know, like he put, you know, stuff away with Hogan before he died and things like that. I think he was on the road to making amends. You know, before he died. So I think there would have been a good chance that he would have been in there right now.
Exactly. Talk about some of the stuff he headlined. Because I think he headlined, probably he was up there with Hogan and some of the other, Ric Flair and some of these other big names. That, I mean, if you counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he would be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Of who's who of professional wrestling. He headlined WrestleMania 4, 5, and 8. He headlined 4 of the first 5 SummerSlams, and then he went on later on when he went to WCW and headlined the Starrcade 95.
Yeah.
Goodness.
And the ones he didn't headline, and the Steamboat was WrestleMania 3, and he stole the show.
Exactly.
The Warrior one was WrestleMania 7, and they almost
stole the show.
Yeah. So even the ones where he didn't main event, you know,
he still stole the show.
He stole the show, yeah.
Yeah, so. And I think he had a really good, I believe it was the feud of the year, and I can't remember which year it was. I think it was 97. He had with Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah, and he put over Diamond Dallas Page.
Diamond Dallas Page, in a couple of interviews that I've heard him in, he said that he could not believe that Macho Man came up to him and goes, "Hey, bro, I think I want to take the cutter." And Diamond just, like, pretty much
fainted,
peed his pants when he said that. You know, he fainted. He's like, "What did you just say? What was that?" And he's, "I think I want to take the cutter." You know, so, of course, Diamond did the honors and Macho Man did the honors and put DDP over.
Yeah. And that's just who he was. He wasn't someone that had to win a match. He didn't mind losing.
No,
and
he liked losing, and not to be pun on Triple H and WWE these days, but there was a lot of these guys that like Macho Man that would do what was best for business, and I don't think necessarily, you know, as long as he, I don't want to make this sound bad, but as long as he could look good in the match and put somebody over and give them a rub to build them up,
yeah,
so that. That next time that they fight, it's an even bigger, because he knew that if he made this guy look bigger and as big as he was, then the next time they draw more money.
Yeah.
And maybe they headline this card next time instead of being on the undercard.
And he did it, you know, on his way up, you know, putting Steamboat over because, you know, they had bigger and better things for Savage, but he didn't, the feud they had and, you know, with the ring bell and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Even the feuds when he wasn't in the world title picture, the Jake the Snake Roberts feud was a classic feud.
Exactly.
And, you know, Macho went over big time in that feud, but it was two guys who didn't mind putting people over.
Him and George Animal Steel.
Yeah.
I mean, George Animal Steel wasn't going anywhere. He was more of a sideshow.
He was like a cartoon character. Yeah.
And he would put over Steel, even though I think most of their matches went no contest or draw or, because George would go eat a turnbuckle or something, or chase after Miss Elizabeth. But, I mean, it matches like that. I mean,
Dusty Rhodes. Yeah. So, he every feud he had was even if it wasn't a top the card feud, was a great feud.
Exactly. So Mike, let's wrap this up. So Macho Man Hall of Fame 2015.
Yep, about 20 years too late.
Too late, so, yeah, I believe so too.
But of course, he's one of the last Mohicans to get in, who really deserved to get in. So it's a great scene. Wish he was alive to be there, because that would have been a fantastic speech. But
yeah, I think we'd have seen him cry.
We'd have seen him cry, I'm sure. So
all right, Mike. Well, thanks for stopping by and talking with me about the Macho Man. And
thank you for having me.
You want to plug your podcast or?
Yeah, just Sports Turnpike with Will and Mike. It's on iTunes. Download and subscribe. It's a good one. So,
all right. Now, if you have any comments or suggestions that you want to see in the Sunday Superstar Spotlight, you can email me at thewrestlingyeti@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Wrestling Yeti. I'm also on Facebook, The Wrestling Yeti. You can find me just about anywhere these days.
Yep.
Especially
he's not in hiding anymore.
Well, you're not gonna find me in at the compound, because I'm in a secret location. Anyway, till next time, so long.